Okay, before we start, say this. The UConn men's basketball team won the NCAA national championship. Just listen. Okay. Eric Hovde did not pick the Wisconsin Badgers to win the national championship.
Okay.
Evers did, and a lot of like state legislators. Like, not even the Badgers, maybe Marquette. Marquette
was pretty
good.
This is the bracket thing.
Yeah, the NCAA tournament. And so, but Eric Hovde, the AP decided that that was enough to write a story about.
Okay.
Like Eric Hovde does
then
not.
He was running for Senate in Wisconsin and did not choose Wisconsin to be the winner.
A Wisconsin team. Because he could have picked Marquette. They were, some would argue they were much better than the Badgers.
Okay.
He picked Purdue, a Badgers rival, the team that got to the championship but lost. So we can thank the UConn Huskies men's basketball team for upending Eric Hovde's campaign.
Oh,
Eric
Hovde, it's over.
Yes.
So the UConn, okay, this is good to know.
Yes.
I, without you, would never have known this.
Yes, because he picked Purdue, a rival of the Badgers, to win the NCAA tournament. The AP decided like that was enough to write a story about. I don't know if they're just bored or we didn't get Tammy Baldwin's pick. He wrote a story about it.
This is one reason why I can't be a politician, because if I ever had to fill out a sports bracket, I would be in so much trouble.
But I think you as a politician, and are you a politician?
I guess not really.
You as a politician could speak to a whole different crowd. We talk about it very little on this podcast, but every once in a while.
I mean, musicals,
well, here's the
theater,
thing. One time
One
time I was talking about politics on the show, and somebody texted me something about Star Trek. And I went, oh, Star Trek. And I don't remember any of the context anymore, but I commented on it. And the rest of the show became texts and calls.
Yeah.
About whatever Star Trek The Next Generation is kind of my go-to. But whatever it was, Star Trek.
Because Star Trek is glorious.
So, like, here, as a politician, you know, everyone thinks NCAA tournament. NCAA tournament's kind of like the biggest sports event besides the Super Bowl. But you could relate to, I think, way more people with some, like, Star Trek or some movie stuff.
Oh, absolutely. I could absolutely do that. The brackets would lose me completely.
But back to my point, thanks to the UConn Huskies upending Eric Hovde's campaign, he picked Purdue to win. They lost big time in the NCAA tournament. I don't even know why we're doing the rest of the podcast.
Right. Well, I don't know. And you know, maybe this is metaphorical. I'm going to stretch this metaphor that you presented to the absolute breaking point. But maybe he did not choose Wisconsin to win because he hasn't lived in Wisconsin in like 30 years. And therefore, he just doesn't have any connection to the land anymore, to the place anymore.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any connection to the Badgers or Marquette. Eric Hovde did live in Wisconsin growing up. As soon as he graduated high school, he pretty much left. He came back to run for Senate in 2012. He lost in the primary to Tommy Thompson. And then now he left again after he lost. And then he has now returned to Wisconsin for one more attempt, one more shot at senatorial glory.
Would you say he returns here at the coaxing of the Republican Party because they don't have
100%.
Any money?
And yes, that is actually, like, we're going to talk about a lot of the kind of ridiculous things that Hovde has said, and his campaign has gotten off to a terrible start. But the underlying current here that I think is really important is that Hovde was handpicked by the Wisconsin Republican Party for one reason and one reason only, and that is that he can self-fund his campaign. He has promised to spend up to $20 million of his own money on this election. And the reason that is important is because at the state level, the Wisconsin Republican Party is very low on funds. And most especially at the federal level, the Republican National Committee is both broke and also being run by Trump family members who have publicly stated that the purpose of the RNC now is to elect not all Republicans, is only to elect Trump, and that every dime that they get will be going to Trump. Typically, the RNC would be supporting the president, certainly, but also Senate candidates and House candidates around the country, governor.
Didn't Derek Van Orden get a lot of money from the feds, from the federal National Republican Party?
And that was because Derek Van Orden was one of the go-to guys for Kevin McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
And now that Kevin McCarthy's out of Congress, Van Orden is going to lose access to those large amounts that he was kind of enjoying from Kevin McCarthy's pack.
Is it ironic that the Republicans in Wisconsin go to somebody that's already lost? Did you say two races in the state?
No, just one.
Just
the primary.
One. He lost the primary
for 2012 Senate.
Okay.
He lost to Tommy Thompson, who then lost to Tammy Baldwin.
And that was a long time ago, yep. Right? That was.
And of course, he was running in 2012 he thought his path to victory was to be far to the right of Tommy Thompson. Tommy Thompson was the moderate Republican. And Hovde was in the race running to Thompson's right on a wide range of really spectacularly extreme conservative and frankly dangerous positions.
Would those same positions even be considered extreme nowadays?
And that's what we're confused about because, yes, some of the things he is modulated on. In 2012, he came out and basically said he was against abortion 100%. No
exceptions.
Exceptions for any reason. Now he is advocating for a 15-month ban.
15-week.
Sorry. Yes, of course.
15-month would be kind of crazy.
The 15-week ban because he knows he can't get elected unless he advocates for that. That's the most extreme on abortion he can be and still be elected.
But does he have every right to, 12 years later, change his position on abortion?
He has every right to do that if he explains why. In a reason that's not political. I want politicians who do serious research and hear from a lot of viewpoints and have the ability to say, oh, you know what? This viewpoint makes a lot of sense. This perspective makes a lot of sense. I'm going to change my mind. I want that.
I'm not going to be great on this, but didn't Obama do this with gay marriage?
Yes.
Like he was against it at first, and then like just the times changed in the midst. We're seeing that with marijuana now.
And Joe Biden was actually crucial to that decision. Joe Biden was the one pushing for acceptance of gay marriage to Obama and talking a lot about that.
I saw a U.S. House member say that we're the customers, you know, and I saw the comeback to that was, no, actually, you work for us. So this is kind of one of them things where Eric Hovde or whoever is running for office, your opinion matters very little. In that if the rest of your constituents, right, the state of Wisconsin says, hey, we're good, like leave it alone.
Right.
Like, or change it, I guess, would be the case.
Well, but again, the question becomes, what thing does he say that we can trust?
Yeah.
Like if he comes out and says, I am 100% against abortion all the time. And then he comes out and says, well, I want a 15-week ban on abortion. Which one of those statements do we trust?
And then can you, hey, if there's a vote in the Senate, would you?
Right, exactly.
You know, the customer thing was kind of interesting. Like, we are not the customers.
No.
You are.
He's the customer.
Yeah, he's the customer. It's kind of funny that way. Okay, so what else?
Let's talk about the really fun one first. Like I said, his campaign is not going well but for two reasons. One, a lot of the, like, really profoundly conservative and scary statements that he made in 2012 when he was running have been resurfacing because the internet never goes away. And he has started off his campaign making some really dumb comments. And what he has done is basically over the last couple of weeks, he has alienated almost every voter in Wisconsin with something he has said.
Oh, good job.
Yeah. It's almost impressive.
Okay. This might be in your notes, but he was endorsed at a Green Bay rally by Donald Trump. Yep. Is he trying to walk that back too a little bit?
Nope.
Like,
eh,
or is
nope,
he full,
he's full bore?
Full bore into that.
He's
okay. I just want to make sure.
And he's full bore into the Trump endorsement.
Because some would say in a statewide election, maybe, I mean, we've seen a governor's race where Trump endorsed.
See, I think in a statewide election, in his mind, his fate is 100% tied to Trump. If Trump wins, he wins.
Okay, that's fair. Then, I mean,
mind.
You can't really criticize him then for taking the
endorsement
of the guy running for president.
He is taking the endorsement. He is running with it.
Yeah.
And he is full-throated about it.
Okay, so you said he said some really dumb things that alienated. Can you give us some examples?
Yes. So the thing that he has done most recently and that has been in the news a lot is he was talking about the 2020 election, and he says he doesn't want to relitigate 2020, but he also doesn't say, yeah, Biden win, like just point blank.
Right.
But people were asking him about nursing homes and people voting in nursing homes. And he stated people in nursing homes should not be voting because they've only got 5 or 6 months to live. So, like, why are they voting? So a really profoundly cruel and here it is. Let me get the exact quote here. Well, if you're in a nursing home, you only have a 5-6 month life expectancy. Almost nobody in a nursing home is in a point to vote. So basically, anyone in a nursing home or any elderly person in Wisconsin, he is just told, you're going to die so soon that you don't get to vote. A boneheaded thing to say. And of course, his campaign has been working furiously to walk it back.
Yeah, he misspoke or something like that,
right.
They'll probably say.
All right, but you learn from politicians in those moments where they say things, you know.
They said the quiet part out loud. Right. That's the thing. Yeah,
exactly.
Why would he care about that? Like, nursing home people shouldn't vote because they only can live. Like, shouldn't he be pro-nursing home people voting?
Well, he should be because people in nursing homes are heavily Republican.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But it's part of the 2020 conspiracy theory that supposedly people in nursing homes didn't really vote, that, like, someone else voted for them.
Yeah.
And there's no proof of that. That did not happen. Not one single case can be pointed to and said this happened. But because they're desperate to undermine the 2020 election, they're coming up with all of these reasons.
Well, that there's no way to prove that anymore because by Hovde's math, all those people are dead now.
Right. Right. Because you only got 5 or 6 months.
Right. That was 4 years ago or 3 years ago.
So he's alienated elderly people. And again, a very strong Republican constituency, not people you want to alienate.
Sure.
Another thing that he has to do is he has to get young people on board. Hovde has to get some young people to come over to the Republican side and vote for him if he wants to win. But back in 2012, during that election where he ran, mm-hmm. here's what he said about young people. There's something going on with our younger people not entering into the labor force, but they have in the past. I fear part of it could be big chronic drug problem in our country that has to do with opiates. I think part of it is kids haven't been taught the same work ethic as the baby boom generation. Basically, young people are lazy. So you've got old people, they're too close to die, so they shouldn't vote. And young people, you're too lazy.
No, this is 12 years ago.
This is 12 years ago.
Has he any other comments? Because we see this still, like young people are living in their parents' basements. And
right.
You know, young people don't want to do the hard jobs. They just want to work at home. I mean, we see this all the time.
Well, I'm going to disagree with that part. Yes, they're still living at home, but they're not living at home because they're not working.
I didn't say that, but I'm saying that's kind of what that's what Republicans are saying.
That's what Republicans like to say. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've made owning a house too expensive. We've made rent too expensive. All of these things that are due to Republican policies are what keeping kids at home.
Well, and then I'll just play devil's advocate here. Republicans would just say it's Bidenomics, and that's why all these things. That's what, I mean, they could flip it and say kids are living in their parents' basement.
They could do that if they had a single shred of evidence, but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a lot of evidence that Trump and Trump's tax cuts seriously affected the economy and how these things go. But there is not a shred of evidence that Biden's policies have come in and caused the increase in home cost and rental cost. None of that. So.
All right. So he's also said something about drinking or alcohol.
Yes, alcohol in Wisconsin. So this is also back in 2012. And he said in an interview that if it were up to him, all alcohol would be illegal unless you brewed it yourself.
Literally yourself, or it was like...
Literally, like if you brew it in your garage,
moonshine,
that's fine. Right. But other than that, alcohol should be illegal. Now...
Was he drunk when he said that?
One would hope... I mean, you would think it's a one-off, but back in 2020, the Wisconsin Tavern...
2012 or 2020? Okay.
2012. Yep. The Wisconsin Tavern League, and that's a very conservative organization, the Wisconsin Tavern League, had to come out and say, well, Hovde's just wrong. It worried the conservative Wisconsin Tavern League so much that they came out and had to issue a statement on it because 161,000 jobs in Wisconsin revolve around beer brewing, revolve around beer and brewing beer and beer consumption. And it accounts for $3.2 billion in wages and $2.6 billion in tax revenue just in Wisconsin. And I think part of the quote was that the ship had sailed, like he wasn't going to be able to do anything about it. But that if it were his choice, alcohol would be illegal to sell.
Yeah, I would love to know the context of the rest of that conversation.
They were talking about marijuana decriminalization.
Sure.
And he was saying, I don't want to decriminalize marijuana. It's bad for whatever. And in fact, this is basically how he got there. He was like, not only do I not want to legalize marijuana, I don't think alcohol should have been legalized in the first place.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, if somebody said this about cigarettes right now, what would your take be? Like, we should ban cigarettes. New Zealand is doing this, by the way. Tobacco, I believe.
I think it's a legitimate point.
It's a little apples to oranges.
It's apples to oranges because of the economic consideration, right? One, you can't really enjoy cigarettes moderately. Smoking cigarettes even one cigarette.
It just messes you up.
Right, just messes you up. You can enjoy alcohol responsibly.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
So it is a big apples to oranges, but there's also the economic benefit to Wisconsin of alcohol is massive compared to the economic benefit of tobacco. So I do think that's a pretty big apples to oranges situation.
Right. Yeah. There. I mean, I just wonder if there's an underlying tone here where he grew up an alcoholic or his dad was, you know what I mean? Like, sure. But this just saying
that, explained.
Yeah.
Not
right. Exactly. Explained. So yeah, pretty weird take.
So in terms of like alienation, right, we've got older people, young people,
all people almost,
and then people who drink alcohol. So those are the three.
Which I kind of wonder what the percentage of people in Wisconsin that just drink, you know, not even like I'm a, you know, everyday drink, like once a week or even a drink a month, just
right.
Like the idea that I can't even have, I can't pour beer on my brats unless I brew the own beer, you know, like it's the only thing I use beer for is pour on my brats, boil them. All right. So that's three things.
Yeah, three. So
is there more people to alienate?
Way more people. We alienate women. As we talked about 2012, when he was running to the right of Tommy Thompson.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying is where else can we go with this?
Yep. Is alienating women by saying I am totally opposed to abortion. Roe v. Wade should be overturned. Sure. Abortion should not be allowed. 100% opposed. So alienating women.
All right. So is this list, you're just going to keep going, welfare queen, student loan. These are all alienation comments?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. All right.
So,
we better get to it, man.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
Student loan forgiveness. So he has come out, and just a couple of days ago, he came out with several Twitter videos and statements about Biden and saying that Biden is trying to buy votes with the student loan forgiveness stuff, right?
Right.
And he's trying to say, oh, it's a terrible thing, blah, blah, blah. It's awful. We should not be forgiving loans. The government should not be in the business of forgiving loans. However, back in 2021, the Hovde Group, which is one of the businesses that he owns, got a PPP loan, Payment Protection Plan loan, for $1 million.
And all those got forgiven,
all
did they not?
All those got forgiven. He did not complain about it then. He didn't.
Yeah.
So apparently, when it's $1 million to him, it's totally fine to forgive that money. That's fine. But when it's $50,000 in student loans that are dragging down students' ability to do things like buy houses, invest in their family, pay for childcare, then it's a terrible tragedy and crime.
So as Hovde here, I would be like, well, the government, Biden's government offered me to take this money. So why wouldn't I take it?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like in 2021.
Which is exactly what's happening with the student loans. So why is he so upset about it?
Right. It's hard to come back.
If he is upset about the government spending money, he should be way more upset about a $1 million loan to a millionaire, which he is many times over. Why did we loan a multimillionaire, almost billionaire, $1 million and forgive it? And why was that okay?
Yeah, why was it forgiven,
if anything?
When
a teacher who's making $50,000 a year and has $50,000 in student loans, why can they not get a forgiveness?
The other funny argument I see against the student loan debt thing is, like, we won't forgive student loan debt, but we will allow for the 1% to write off their private jets on their taxes.
Right. Yeah.
Right? Like, so we're forgiving their debt.
Yeah, we're forgiving
their
debt. Not forgiving most people's debt. We're normal people's debt.
Well, also, these people have been paying student loans, and we probably just should do a student loan show at one point, but the people have been paying their student loans. Their debt has been forgiven. Like, right. Whatever money they borrowed, they've already paid back probably three or four times.
And actually, sadly, none of the forgiveness policies affect my particular loan. But I'm still paying back my student. I am 50 years old, and I'm still paying back my college loans.
And you probably—
And I will. I will die with them.
And you've probably surpassed what you borrowed.
Oh, 100%.
So, like, the government's already got back what it gave you, and then some, right? Plus the VIG, so to speak.
Plus, I mean, I am a functioning member, taxpaying member of society that has contributed to our community. So
what I'm hearing is William Garcia is a little mad at Biden for not expanding this, but I believe the Supreme Court struck it down.
It wouldn't be bad if it hit me in my particular loan.
Supreme Court struck it down, though, right? Like, you would have been eligible for the first thing Biden did years ago?
I would have been eligible for the one that the Supreme— I mean, that would have been $20,000 of it.
Yeah.
Which is not all of it, but it would have been helpful.
Well,
but
for
the Supreme
sure.
Court cut that one down.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so—
All right, back to Hovde.
Guess who else we can alienate? Farmers. Here's a quote from an interview in 2012. We don't engage in hard labor like we did. We don't have as many accidents on the job, most of us. Now we're involved in some kind of white-collar profession or even professions that are involved in manual labor. It's much safer, much more protective. Think of farming. Look at the physical toll that it would take on the body. Now you're largely driving around a tractor. So for all you farmers out there, Hovde does not believe you work hard.
Well, he could evolve this quote, too, and say now, like, AI and GPS are driving.
Sure.
You don't even have to drive the tractor. You sit in there.
But if he spent any time in a farm, I think he would realize that the tractor does a lot of work for you. so that you could do a lot of work doing other things.
Well, yeah,
like,
I mean,
it has, like, it is not replacing one difficult job with another. And if Hufti spent any time on a farm, I think he would know what a physically demanding job that is.
Yeah, if he wanted to talk about farming, he'd talk about regulations or water quality or animal abuse, but not the farmer
think
themselves.
Think about Wisconsin. Yeah. Old people, people who drink alcohol, women, and farmers.
And young people.
And young people. How do you win? How do you win? Another thing, Social Security. He wants it trimmed. He wants benefits cut, and he wants a retirement age raised from 68 to 72. So you've got a whole group of people who are counting on Social Security to do that.
Is anyone out there, like, I understand, like, the Republicans, and I don't know why they want to raise the retirement age, but are Democrats, anyone out there being like, you know what, it's too high? It should be like 65 or 60 or whatever.
No,
you know,
no one is really talking about it being too high, but they are talking about the fact that the monthly payments are too low.
The Social Security payments.
The Social Security payments. And so there are a lot of Democrats talking about how those monthly payments need to be increased, which we could easily do and fully fund Social Security, and it would not be a problem. All we need to do is lift the cap on rich people and how much they pay into Social Security.
Yeah, something like Jeff Bezos paid into all of his Social Security for the year in like the first hour of 2025 or 2024.
Yeah, just stuff all like we need to do is remove that cap and the program would be 100% saved.
Yeah.
And last thing, sick people, he would like to get rid of Obamacare, of the Affordable Care Act. And getting rid of that would drive insurance costs up. It would reduce people's access to insurance. And especially, it would damage and impact people with pre-existing conditions, because without the ACA, insurances would be able to go back to being able to deny health care to people with pre-existing conditions. A lot of people don't remember, like 30-year-olds don't remember having to go to a job and listing out on the form. When I got for my first teaching job, when I got hired, I had to go to this list and I had to list out all the medical things wrong with me because the insurance wasn't going to pay for those.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And that is gone now.
That's kind of like the one great thing about the Affordable Care Act. I'm not saying it's...
It is one... I mean, it saved my daughter's life, so I am very appreciative of it, and I will fight tooth and nail to protect it at all cost. And even Republicans know that getting rid of the pre-existing condition clause is a political loser, because they consistently say, we're not going to get rid of pre-existing condition... condition requirements. However, they have never not once been able to put forward a policy, an actual like law that protects it and repeals the rest of Obamacare.
Yeah, if you're going to get rid of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, there hasn't been a real replacement for it.
Right, exactly. And we remember the whole McCain thumbs down thing on it because of this exact reason. Too many people would have lost their pre-existing condition coverage.
And just the oddity of that, right? It took a guy who soon after died of cancer to save the Affordable Care Act, a very staunch Republican, right?
Yep. So we've alienated just about every person in Wisconsin. But again, the reason that they have to come in and they have to bring in someone who lives in California, who was elected the business person of the year or top 100 residents of Orange County for 3 years in a row in 2018, 2019, and 2020. He was elected to that by the Orange County newspaper because that's where he lives, is Orange County, Florida.
Yeah. California.
That the reason that Republicans had to bring him in is because they do not have the funds or the ability to get the funds needed to mount an actual campaign with like actually experienced politician in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I just find it odd that we got to recruit a millionaire to run for us because they're one of us. Like they don't, you know, like how much does a banana cost really, you know, like that. Also, they bring in someone from California, which Republicans hate California,
Republicans
right? So now
California,
we're bringing in California to run for us. I don't have a big problem with somebody wants to move into the district to run for a thing. But the rest of the stuff doesn't add up. And also, you're bringing in somebody who's already lost an election. So, like, what are you doing? We've seen this with Tim Michaels. We brought him in, right?
Yep.
The Republicans did. Dan Kelly, I don't know if he lived here before, but we brought in another guy that lost an election to run for us in a big statewide election. So, like, okay, the writing's not on the wall already, Republicans. Like, bring in some fresh face, you know?
Well, no, they don't need, they don't need to bring in a fresh face. They need to bring in someone with actual political experience in Wisconsin. They need to bring in someone that Wisconsinites know and have some kind of respect for and would be willing to fund. But that politician at the statewide level on the Republican side apparently does not exist.
Yeah.
So so that is our – I'm sure we're going to come back to Eric Hovde. I don't think this is our – the last time – as I said, his campaign is not going well. He is continually making dumb comments. So I'm sure that we will check in from time to time Eric Hovde.
It was interesting to see in the last week his challenger in the Republican Party dropped out and is now running against Brad Paff, right?
Correct. Correct.
So, like, I think that came with the Donald Trump endorsement. She said, I'm not going to beat this millionaire.
Well, and the Republican Party, I think, had a very frank conversation with Stacey Klein and said, we don't have the money to support you.
Yeah.
We can't, if you were to win the primary, we don't have the money to support you because you cannot self-fund a campaign. He can, so he needs to be the nominee.
Is she like coaxed to leave the race? Hey, go run over here because we have no
evidence of that, but I would strongly suspect.
I mean, it kind of makes sense
that she was basically told, if you get out of the race so that Hovde has a clear path, then we'll support you in running for Brad Paff's seat.
Yeah, something like that.
So,
all right.
The La Crosse County Democratic Party meets the third Monday of every month at our office at 2318 State Road, right across the street from Javavino. You can find out information on all of the things we're doing at our website, laxdems.com. You can also email me, William Garcia, at chair@laxdems.com. Have a great day.